Welcome to the Nonprofit Hub Radio Podcast, where we highlight nonprofit innovators, leaders, and influencers every week that are changing the sector for the better. I'm your host, Delaney Mullenix, Executive Director of Nonprofit Hub. If you're not for profit and all for purpose, you're in the right place. You see, we know you're already doing good, but we've designed this podcast to help nonprofit professionals find growth, joy, and connection. So tune in weekly for new episodes to elevate your cause, spread the news, and share the resources we share with you.
We want to thank Asana for sponsoring today's episode of the Nonprofit Hub Radio Podcast. Want to amplify your nonprofit's impact? Asana helps you collaborate more efficiently across teams so you can put more time and resources toward your mission. Go to asana.com/nonprofit to get 50% off. That's Asana, ASANA.com/nonprofit.
Hello, everyone. Delaney Mullenix here, Executive Director of Nonprofit Hub. I'm pleased to introduce Tucker Wanamaker, my lovely guest for this episode of the Nonprofit Hub Radio Podcast. Tucker is the co-founder and CEO of Thrive Impact. Tucker is working hard to right the injustices happening against nonprofit leaders and solve nonprofit leader burnout for those that are in some of the toughest leadership conditions. So if you can relate, please stay tuned and hear what Tucker has to say. Tucker, share a little bit more about you, where you're from, where you're at right now, what you're doing.
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm a little bit of my story. I'm an entrepreneur, started a marketing company way back in the day that turned into a community philanthropist. I ended up raising over around $500,000 selling wildfire relief t-shirts and had to learn how to give money away and started doing a lot of community activism work and fundraising campaigns for nonprofits. And I just fell in love with this space and moved to DC with my family of six and ended up selling the marketing company. And I went deep into nonprofits. I started in nonprofit leadership. I started working inside of them. And, you know, what I was looking for was deeper purpose and impact and meaning. And what I actually ended up finding was pretty deep burnout. And and so for me, a lot of my journey over the last really 12 to 13 years or something like that has been partly reflecting on that, but is also really dedicating my life to supporting those who are nonprofit leaders who are in the toughest leadership conditions that we're all really facing at this day, and looking at the individual components of burnout, the organizational components of burnout, but also even more many times egregiously the systemic issues that, and what I like to say, are the injustices that nonprofit leaders are facing on an ongoing basis from the system. And how do we help support those who are really supporting the very fabric of our communities? So that's a little bit about me. And so we started Thrive Impact about 5.5 years ago to help nonprofit leaders thrive so they can have the impact that they set out to have and their communities need from them. So that's a little bit about me.
Yes. And I want to dive more into all of those topics that you just mentioned, how nonprofit leaders are facing some of the toughest conditions and all of that kind of stuff, which is super important for us to all be aware of so that we can kind of confront that in our own leadership positions. But I also want to share how I met Tucker. Tucker and I met in his neck of the woods in Denver, Colorado at the Nonprofit Technology Conference. And we attended, and correct me if I'm getting any of these details wrong, but it's the fundraising effectiveness project, and it was called the roadshow?
Generosity Roadshow, yeah, with Tim Sarantino.
Roadshow.
Neon One.
And there's a couple of us in this really cool co-working space in downtown Denver. And it's Jeopardy. It's nonprofit Jeopardy based on the most recent it was email fundraising report, correct?
Yeah, this massive report that
everyone
had put together. Yeah.
Yes. And so three contestants that were attending needed to play Jeopardy. And I definitely was not raising my hand. I was not going to go up there and try to play Jeopardy. But Tucker was one of those people, and he just like jumped up there front and center and started playing. And he just, I mean, every question Tucker got right. And I feel like he won by a long shot. if I remember correctly.
I have no idea. All I know is I got a little Matchbox car as a little winner. And I was like, sweet.
Yes.
Yeah, it was
pretty funny. Won the Rob Show Matchbox car.
That's funny.
Yeah. So, I mean, just going to show, I know that's a fun, that's like a funny, like cheesy story, but like you truly are so tapped into the nonprofit space and what people are dealing with in terms of what's not working, what's happening. And I think that that shines through and just speaks to the person that you are. Which also leads into how I really want other people, to really get to know you and like ask some funny questions. So that's a great story, but I was looking at your LinkedIn profile and I noticed that you have 32 recommendations on LinkedIn highlighting your attributes, your passions, your talents. 32 people have gone out of their way to leave you recommendations. And I think I don't have any. So this goes to just speak to like who you are and how other people are proud of you and how they recognize the good work that you're doing. But so my question is, what are you most proud of?
That's such a hard question. Although it is something that I invite nonprofit leaders to do too. So I guess I better lean into my own stuff too. Of like, no, we need to celebrate our own wins that we have.
I think you might have asked me that one of the first times we met.
Yeah. Oh, so touche, huh? Touche. Yeah. Nice, the lady. I would, for this year, I would say I've really been leaning into the inner work of leadership and I'm going to use a word here that has just continued to emerge, which is that my path forward is not going to be outward. It's going to be inward. It's to use a quote from a dear mentor of mine who has shaped so much of our work, Dr. Daniel Friedland, who is a neuroscientist who wrote a book called Leading Well from Within. And he said, if we want to lead well in the world, the first place we need to lead well is within ourselves. And Delaney, that leading well from within thing is really tough. Like it's tough. Like literally this week I've been hitting moments, particularly around ways that I've noticed how much isolation I've created for myself, particularly around our own revenue and it's just this like really honest assessment and really a healing journey of old ways that I thought, that at one point served me well, but right now they don't anymore. And so I think the thing I'm most proud of for this year has been the courage to pause, notice, and choose the continual path of this inner work. Because it brings up things that feel, straight up vulnerable, right? It's Brene Brown, courage does not exist without vulnerability. And I have felt definitely vulnerable this year. And I'm grateful to myself for stepping into that and continuing to choose it. So.
Yes. Yeah. And I echo that. And I mean, preach, like we talked about, we've had so many good conversations when I attended, and we'll get to that, like some of the workshops that you offered to nonprofit leaders. When you look back on the past couple of weeks and you're like, why did I respond that way to that situation? That is not who I am. I don't like how it sounded in that situation. That is not who I want to be. And that this all exists because of burnout, and that's that self-leadership that you're talking about that like we need to tap into. And it's everywhere. Leaders are looking for this everywhere. I actually just got back yesterday in the evening from a conference called the Purpose Summit. And every single session is on this topic about how can we have impact, how can we lead ourselves with purpose and lead our teams with purpose.
Yeah.
And I attended two sessions. This is so, literally this conversation could come at like a more coincidental time.
Wow.
The first session I attended was self-leadership, leading self. The second one was leading others, building trust with your team. And I was so impacted by those first two sessions. And these two sessions spoke to my soul in the moment. And I knew that I wanted to attend these ones. These were the breakouts, right? So there are several options that I could have gone to. And there were three total breakouts. After these two, I went back to my hotel room and I had to like journal.
Yeah, totally. I don't need more information anymore.
I'm like, this was it. This is why I was here. This is like what I needed to work on.
Yeah.
Preach. Like I said, it's people need it. People are feeling that, so.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, good job on choosing to go back and journal. Yeah. I mean, I really believe we're not in the information age. I mean, we don't need more information. Like, it's helpful to get some of those frames, but when you feel that prompting, like, I'm so grateful to hear that you took the courage to just wait, I need to listen to myself and go and like let this sink in and process it. And so well done on that. Yeah. That's great.
And I feel like those situations where you feel these moments of inspiration and passion and the motivation to tackle something. And sometimes the constraints in our environment, whether we have like another meeting coming up or we need to go do something, we lose those sparks. Mm-hmm. And they usually don't come back. So you have to jump on those opportunities when you feel those sparks, take advantage of that because they're limited, especially if you are experiencing burnout or you're exhausted or you're tired. It's like, you kind of just need to take advantage of those moments.
Yeah.
But so yeah, I mean, nonprofit burnout is all too common.
It's rampant. Yeah, it's rampant. Yeah.
What are some of the reasons that nonprofit leaders are facing burnout? Some aren't so obvious. Actually, yeah. I remember you telling your story about yours, and I was like, wow, I've never actually thought about that specific reason.
Yeah, we really, in all of my reflection on this topic and in deep dives into data and things like that, is, you know, if I reflect on my own burnout story, you know, there's on the individual side, right, going back to self-leadership, you know, there were some of the components of, for me, in my burnout, the specific story that I'm thinking about, which is probably, I don't know, 8-9 years ago or something like that. And I placed these individual demands on myself. One was I was actually too idealistic and not balancing that with realism. I think that we as nonprofit leaders need to balance the two. Mm-hmm. If we're too realistic or we're too idealistic, we get in trouble on both sides. And so I realized that I was too idealistic. And I also, too, I realized that I was individually, I had put this demand on myself, like I almost like I was creating the conditions for me to be sort of a martyr to the mission, which was, of course, now I've learned is very systemic too. There were organizational demands, and you kind of spoke to this a little bit, Delaney, which is, you know, the organization in particular that I'm thinking about that I was a part of had this vision for the world that was beautiful. And I totally bought into it. And they did not live into that themselves, like at all. There was not a sense of embodiment. And I find that very rampant across a lot of nonprofits, where organizationally the vision we're trying to bring about in the world is not who we actually are.
Yeah.
To the point now in all of our, for example, in our strategic planning work, one of the very things that we ensure is always embedded in the plan or in the direction is what we call the impact foundation. We have usually people have three impact pillars, and there needs to be a foundation of that, which is, how are we measuring our impact of ourselves? Of, you know, how are we having a culture of inclusion, compassion, and support? That's one from one organization. So those are the types of things of we must embody. It's kind of like what Dr. Danny Friedland said, is if we want to lead well in the world, the first place we need to lead well is within ourselves. And so that goes for us as individuals, and that also goes for us as organizations.
Mm-hmm.
But the other piece, again, that we've just continued to dive deep is the systemic. Is what I've really understood is really about our own mission. We did say, and we still do say, that our mission is to solve nonprofit leader burnout. But what I'm continuing to know more and more and understand more is that our mission is to solve injustices happening against nonprofit leaders on a systemic level.
That's strong.
So when you think about things from pay disparities, I mean, many of you all either have felt this or experienced this, but pay disparities is a good example. You know, nonprofit leaders make potentially on average somewhere between 25% and 50% less than their for-profit counterparts of similar sized organizations.
Mm-hmm.
75% of nonprofit leaders are women. And I have definitely experienced many stories of the power dynamics that have gone awry of everything from casual male chauvinism down to egregious acts of sexual exploitation for donations. And so, like, and those stories happen.
Yeah.
And yet they're not really told, to be totally honest with you. And then we get into the leadership development side. You know, there's an older stat, but it's still part of our sort of foundation, is that less than 1% of foundation dollars have historically gone towards the leadership development, essentially, right? Investing in professional development. And in the for-profit world, they spend four times more on leadership development. And why is that? Because it's actually supportive. But unfortunately, we have this deep scrutiny on a systemic level around the culture, scrutinizing our 990s and scrutinizing our quote-unquote overhead. But we know that burnout's the enemy of creating positive change, and that when we invest in ourselves, we're able to actually have create the change that we need to create. And then sort of a double injustice here, which is not only are all these, and there's many more systemic issues happening, or chronic revenue instability. You also have the issues around significant staffing challenges right now. But the other side of the coin here is that people are, everybody, our communities take advantage of our work as nonprofit leaders. Yeah. What happens when a nonprofit is a part of a community? Things like literacy rates go up, violence rates go down, homelessness rates get better, right? We have all this work that nonprofit leaders do to undergird the very fabric of our societies that literally everybody gets to take advantage of, right? It strengthens our communities. And yet on the other side of that is we're highly scrutinized. Yeah. The pay disparities, all the stuff that I just mentioned.
Yeah.
And so when I think about what's really going on here is we have a systemic problem that these stories and these voices need to be told. We're working actually on raising some funds to put together an impact documentary specifically on this. Mm-hmm. Because I realized that what we're sharing is, we need a more, what I like to say, a more scalable bridge of empathy. Because so much of what happens, I was talking to a CEO the other day of a community mental health organization. She's just like, man, I really wish that boards, my board and our funders would stop just giving me answers and would actually seek to understand so we can really get the work done. Mm-hmm. And that leads to still some of those systemic issues of like business people are like the varsity team, but nonprofit leaders are the JV team. And we need to get the answers from the really smart people so that way we can be better, right? And like, that's not how it works. We deal with so much more complexity than most businesses have even any understanding of. There's a significant lack of understanding. There's a significant lack of clarity of what is really going on in the nonprofit space. And a lot of this stems, I'll speak to this last piece, which is a lot of this stems from even at a more meta level. I was watching a video from a guy named Peter Senge. He's been a teacher of ours. I don't know him, but his work has been a teacher of ours. He coined the term a learning organization back in the 90s. And I was watching this video of him, and he said that the prevailing system of management is destroying people. The prevailing system of management that we exist in is destroying people because it's about control, not about learning. And when I say our prevailing system of management, that's industrial age, top-down leadership, control-oriented, directing, telling versus unlocking, inviting, asking, engaging the many and the power of great questions. And we come from a world that leadership has historically been about the few who have the answers. Mm-hmm. But that system is not working. And not only is it not working, it's destroying people. Mm-hmm. And then with so much change happening at an exponential rate right now in our world. And I was watching a video about ChatGPT, and they literally use the words double exponential when it came to the amount of change that's happening when it comes to our world.
Yeah.
Well, it's ridiculously inefficient and growing very quickly irrelevant to have a top-down leadership structure and have the few who have the answers.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people are talking about that change fatigue and how us as human beings literally cannot keep up with the amount of changes that we've been experiencing in the last 3 to 4 years. And on top of that, to your point about the top-down leadership and the, what did you call it, moving back to a management where it becomes...
About control.
About control. Mm-hmm. I think that when a nonprofit leader becomes burnout, even if they had been a better leader, a leader that empowers and provides direction and gives their, and is a leader to their team versus a manager, I think when a nonprofit leader becomes burnout, they revert back to management. Like, I think in your brain, there's like a backwards movement where I no longer have the capacity to be a leader, and I'm reverting back to a manager because being a to-do assigner is easier.
Yeah. And I need to control. I need to control the situation.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to engage our teams in co-creation.
Yeah.
And essentially in the power of generative quality questions.
Yeah.
And I just to say out there, like, I am still learning into this myself. I mean, I was sharing earlier, particularly around our own revenue, I realized that I'd created a space of isolation for myself. Like, I had this belief that my job was to have the answers. And again, I even teach on this stuff. I've been teaching this for a long time. And I still have spaces that I'm realizing, like, co-creation is literally one of our core values. And I continue to do things like pause, notice, and choose, which is a lot of Dr. Danny's work for, you know, that has really influenced us, of noticing, the more I notice, the more I notice. And I realize, wow, I didn't co-create there. I sort of defaulted and was in reaction around some of these old ways. You know, I mean, we're fish that don't know what water we're swimming in half the time, right? Fish don't talk about, there's an old joke of, you know, what do fish talk about? Well, it's hard to know what fish talk about, but we can for sure know that it's not about water, you know? And it's like, we've been swimming in this water, all of us, we're nonprofit, for-profit, everywhere. We've been swimming in this water for decades now.
Yeah.
And that's why Peter Senge's voice to me was so poignant, because like, that form of management is literally destroying people, because it's about control and it creates more isolation. It treats people like machines. And we're not machines, we're humans.
Mm-hmm.
And when we pause as humans, some of the better parts of us start to work. But when you pause a machine, it stops working. And so anyway, just a whole different approach is what we need right now in terms of how we adjust and adapt to this change, because the old way of doing it is not going to work.
Want to amplify your nonprofit's impact? Asana's powerful work management platform helps you collaborate effortlessly across teams so you can put more time and resources toward your mission. From program delivery and fundraising campaigns to volunteer management and more, manage all your work teams in Asana. Nonprofits get 50% off and resources from their team. Head to asana.com/nonprofit to grab your discount. That's Asana, ASANA.com/nonprofit.
One of the loudest things that I took away from the workshop that I attended through Thrive Impact was the need to respond versus react. And that's what I love about your comment from this individual that you keep mentioning, Dan, about pause, notice, and like then respond, so that you're not reacting. That's something that I actually have written down in my Slack, and I like try to return to it.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So that I can continue to keep doing that. But let's continue the conversation on what Thrive Impact offers and even this free workshop. Maybe share more about like the services and programs that you guys offer, but also within this specific workshop that I attended, I love to talk and even be refreshed like for myself, but to share with all of the listeners today, the six, maybe a couple of the shifts that nonprofit leaders need to make to lead in these challenging environments.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think in a nutshell, what we offer is we do bottom-up, co-created, oriented things, strategic planning. You know, most strategic planning is top-down. And there's a reason, you know, we have a joke that we say, how many of you have ever experienced the pain of an irrelevant strategic plan before? And most people raise their hand and laugh, because they have. And why is there a cliche in the nonprofit world about the strategic plan sitting on the shelf gathering dust? It's because it happens too often. And a lot of the reason why it happens is because it's not co-created in a real human way with the very people who are most proximate to the work. It's top down. You know, it's a board going off into their board retreat with some consultant who then comes out with some answers and tells people where they need to go, as opposed to co-creating. But people have energy towards what they get to create. So that's one thing that we do is strategic planning, but also even things that are more altitudes down, reinventing of programs or impact strategies or revenue strategies, but doing it in a very co-creative, facilitated way. And then the other side, which is really a lot of my deep passion personally, is leadership development training. And so we have a whole community model called Thrivers, but we also do a lot of deep training around both the self work and the outer work of because this is really a whole different operating system. It's like moving from a PC to a Mac, right? It's like, you know, to go out of this top down and being the few who have the answers type of leadership model into engaging the many in the power of better and generative questions. That's a whole different operating system, and it takes a lot of courage to go into that space. And so we give training and teaching in an experiential way for people to be able to help their teams make that shift. Quite literally give them shared language around what does it mean to be co-creative? What is the rhythm and the roles around that? What's the role of a CEO or an ED in that type of an environment?
Yeah,
because it feels a little clunky, and I'll speak to that from lived experience. And so, yeah, so that's what we really do is leadership development training on the self-work and as well as the outer work.
Yeah. I think that there's a community that is growing around this type of work. And you guys have been, you've had, Thrive Impact has existed for how many years now?
5.5 years.
Okay. At the conference that I recently attended, there was one of the sessions, and I had so much to process and so many things that I kind of attached to in my current situation. And one of them was your value system and like living through your values, which you've talked about a couple times already in this episode, but the importance of your organizational values. And I feel like you talked about this in terms of what did you call it? The three impact areas of a nonprofit.
Oh, the individual, the organization, and the system. Is that what you're talking about?
I can't remember. I'll have to
that's okay.
go back, but kind of just that, like people weren't actually living the vision that they were seeing. They weren't like incorporating that.
Oh yeah.
They were doing. And so we talked with, there was a gentleman from, what's the spray that you, if something is like rubbing DW40?
WD-40, yeah.
WD-40, yeah. Okay. So the previous CEO of this company came and spoke, and he talked about value-based decisions and like why they became so successful. And he talked about the importance of having a hierarchical list of values versus just a list of values.
Mm-hmm.
They need to be order. And when you make decisions, you need to start with the most important value. And if your decision doesn't say we value this, you don't even need to question the rest of them. So for instance, for them, one of the things, their first value is we value doing the right thing. Their fifth value was we value financial sustainability.
Mm. And
so if a company came to them, one of our products is going to save you billions of dollars, but it causes cancer in like the state of California or something like that.
Yeah.
Then if you banked that against your first most important value, the decision was already made to not do it. But if you had just had equal level values across the playing field and it met one of them, maybe your decision would have been yes.
Yeah.
And I applied this, I think more importantly, when I heard this, I thought, I think I need this for myself as a leader, actually.
Yeah.
To create a hierarchical set of values for myself so that I can be better at what we keep talking about, leading yourself. And I thought that was so relevant.
That's super relevant, Delaney.
Yeah.
Very relevant. I love that.
Another thing that you spoke to as well was we don't have to have all the answers as a nonprofit leader, and how can we become the person who doesn't have all of them and make others on our team empowered to know that they also have this specific power. And there's a system developed by Ken Blanchard. Are you familiar with Ken Blanchard? Mm-hmm.
No, I'm not actually.
So he does a ton of leadership training and organizational leadership development programs. And one of the parts of building trust in others, so leading others, is this system that looks like a star, and their points of power, activating your points of power. And the exercise is what ways do you feel powerful in the workplace, and what ways do you have power in your position? So it can be like literally anyone across an organizational structure. It doesn't need to be someone at the top. You can do this like with anyone in your staff. And you ask them, in what ways do you feel powerful? And almost never can people come up with more than three. And the thing to do is go talk with others and see what they wrote down, and realize that you have so many more areas of power in your specific position. And then you can also organize your points of power in the form of a star. And there's position, there's task, there's knowledge power, there's relationship power, And then there's another one that I might not be able to remember right now, but you have all these different points of power and they should actually balance into a star. And if you are exhibiting too much position power, maybe you need to like grow in your skill set so you have more knowledge power, or build your network so you have more relationship power. And that was a really cool activity that
I love that
be applied in any organization to empower your employees to realize they can activate all their points of power regardless of like their position.
Oh, I love that. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, speaking to, I love what you're sharing on this. To go back to Dr. Danny, that's what we call him, Dr. Danny, is, you know, he shares really a reframe of leadership altogether, which is leadership is not about a role. It's a way of being. It's an active influence. And so we do it, like we do an activity with organizations and sometimes with whole teams. In fact, we have a conscious leadership workshop, a free one coming up on June 6th. And one of the activities we do is an activity around when are you with everybody in the room, when are you a most effective leader and when you are a least effective leader? And what's fascinating about that experience is it helps people realize that they already have influence, which means that they're a leader.
Yeah.
Again, going back to this old form of leadership are about those people. And you see it all baked into our language. We call certain teams leadership teams. Well, what does that imply about the rest of the people, right? Oh, they're not leaders. Like that's an issue. Actually, our words create worlds for us. And but what Danny was saying was that leadership is about an act of influence. And the question is not whether or not you're a leader. The question is what type of influence are you having in the world in your space? Right? Is it in the stream of appreciation? Are you raising a value, or is it in the stream of depreciation? Are you reducing and taking away value? Are you being a resource to others and to yourself? Are you being a demand to others and yourself?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's such a reframe. And I've noticed this when nonprofit leaders, when we're in the room where we ask the board chair and, you know, the entry level person, all the exact same question around leadership. And man, are people hungry to realize, oh, wow, I have influence. I'm a leader here. Like it's a game changer for a lot of people here to realize that I'm not just here mindlessly following wherever the tides may take me. Mm-hmm. But actually, to your point, I have influence and I love that star. I love mm-hmm. to almost unpack what is that influence or your power mm-hmm. to be able to help people actually quantify that a little bit more explicitly. That's brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's so much more that we could talk about. But do you want to share any more about the impact cycle that you guys kind of use to work with different nonprofits?
Yeah, sure. I can talk about that or the six shifts or whatever you feel would be great.
Yeah. I am a huge fan. I think maybe yeah. What do you think is most relevant, even just based on like your most current experiences, what, like you said, the injustices that are happening. I mean, what shift do you think, if you could teach all the listeners today one shift, what would you want them to know?
I will make Sarah, our chief of impact at Thrive Impact, Sarah Fanslow. She's an amazing individual.
She is incredible. Yeah.
Who brings so much of the data, and like so much of all this work has a lot of deep data behind it, which we'd be happy to share with you around this whole change approach in general around co-creation. Our methodology is appreciative inquiry, which based on an independent study shared that 90% of these types of change approaches work inside of organizations. So there's a lot of deep data behind this. And I just have to thank Sarah and appreciate Sarah for helping to bring a lot of that data forward around it. And so I want to make her proud here, which is her favorite shift is shift number 5, which is stop saying yes. Mm-hmm. And this is one I'd say I've had the most learning that I've needed to have, which is I love to say yes. I mean, my heart goes out. I mean, this is part of that, my idealistic side, but I see pain and I want to solve it. I want to help. And, you know, this shift of stop saying yes. And what it means is really to double down on your real value. So we use a framework called the impact pyramid, which is vision, impact. And I kind of mentioned it a little bit earlier around our strategic planning. But what Sarah says around this is that our no's give power to our most important yeses. Mm. But most of the time inside of our organizations, we're just saying way too many yeses and we're spread way too thin. And we don't have an objective decision-making framework that helps us to be able to have that conversation with that one board member who just brought some random idea, or I know we're working with an organization now that has a lot of donor-driven programs, but they don't really see how it all fits together. That's a problem. And they need to start saying no and stop saying yes. Mm-hmm. But how do you do that? And how do you do that in a non-subjective way, but in an objective way that helps to change the types of conversations we're able to have? And so Stop Saying Yes is probably one of the biggest shifts that every organization can do. Is it's not looking at how do you get more and more efficient. It's actually looking at what can you cut that's not having the impact that you're actually trying to have. Some things just need to be sunset because they cost too much. And if you're not really evaluating your cost to beneficiary ratios, if you're not if you're not evaluating what it costs to raise a dollar, these are really important objective measures that helps us to going back to really the Hippocratic Oath of do no harm.
Yeah.
If we're not measuring our impact and knowing what is having positive change and what is not having positive change, then we could very well be hurting people. And in fact, we may be very well hurting ourselves too, because we're just trying to do too many things.
Yeah.
And so the goal here is that. And then the last part of that is not only stop saying yes at a high level, but also asking the question of what will it take if somebody comes to us with an idea, or if we're trying to process through, that we really take a little bit of a pause and notice what will it take for us to be able to do this in a realistic way as best as we possibly can. And so, but this particular frame that I just, again, appreciate Sarah so much for has been really powerful, I think, for us too, because I was realizing myself as a CEO of this organization, I mean, I was saying too many yeses because, you know, squirrel, I got excited, whatever it was. And that was part of my own leadership, is still part of my own leadership journey. But really discover what is the best of who you are.
Mm-hmm.
What is your best? And what is your unique real value that you are bringing to the ecosystem around you? And look at that and double down on that. And stop saying yes to all the other things that are taking you away. So that's the shift that I would say is one of the most powerful ones, to say no to things. And it gives you power too. When you actually start doing it, you're like, oh my gosh, I was so afraid. And then you say no, you're like, oh, I feel so much lighter. It's a really fascinating journey of saying no to things.
Yeah. I think I'm going to have to add to my Slack, our no's give power to our most important yeses. Maybe like make a plaque or a t-shirt or something out of it.
Yeah.
I'll send you one.
That is a Sarah. That's a Sarah-ism. And I'd so appreciate her so much.
I love that. Yeah. That's a great one. Well, we always try to include a segment at the end of every episode called Good News for Nonprofits. What is a bit of good news for the nonprofit sector that you can share?
I mean, I think the good news is that while we talked about so many systemic issues, I think the good news is that we really do have choice. Like when we really dig into ourselves, I think about Viktor Frankl, who is the sociologist who was also in a concentration camp as a Jew. And he wrote the book, Man's Search for Meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And the more and more I've learned this inner work, the more and more I've realized how much choice and power I really do have. And I think that's really good news, to be totally honest. I think that's really great news of realizing that I don't have to lean into all the old belief systems that I used to had. I don't have to live in this world of top-down leadership. I don't have to be the one who has all the answers. I mean, man, the more that I've realized that that's not my job, but has actually come up with just great questions for me to engage my team in and co-create together, I have felt so much more free to not be isolated. Isolation is killer for humans. And so I think that's actually really good news, that anybody out there who's wanting to figure out this path, you have immense choice. We just don't quite see it yet many times. Yeah. And when we can do some more of that inner work and reflect on what belief systems that we have and do it in a space of community too, I've found that when we do some of these group experiences and we're all kind of going through that together, it's really powerful because we don't feel like we're alone. And it fits the neuroscience around that Dr. Danny used to teach us around how our brains work. We go from spaces of belonging into significance or strategy. And if we don't have that sense of belonging, it just circumvents everything. And so being in those spaces of realizing we have choice and we're not alone and we're not meant to do this alone. That I think that's really good news, is it's okay to lean into a different way.
Yeah.
And when we do, I mean, I've had a lot of healing myself this year, and I, you know, while it felt very vulnerable, I, at the same time, I'm just immensely grateful for sort of the freedom almost I feel like I have now. It's fascinating. And my life isn't easy. I mean, I've got 4 kids who are very expensive, and you know, I'm basically running both a for-profit and a nonprofit at the same time. Like, we kind of have a both and on our work, and revenue is tough, straight up, right? I face a lot of the same things that all of your listeners are facing, most likely. And there's a different path. And so I just want to encourage people in that it's okay. There is a different path.
Yeah. That's beautiful. Good news. I do often feel that we put ourselves in a box where we don't feel like we're free to have our own choices and make our own decisions. But to your point, I think that's something that we can all be a lot more grateful for. I struggle sometimes with just gratitude in general and realizing like all that we are blessed with in this day and age. And you're right. Choice is definitely one of those things.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a great answer. Well, Tucker, it's been a pleasure having you here. I know our listeners all found value in this, and we'll make sure to share all the resources that Thrive Impact offers. Any last words for our listeners today?
No, Delaney, I just wanted to appreciate you. I appreciate you leaning in to some of this stuff too. You're not only just stuff that you learn from us, but also learn from others. And I just in the short time I've gotten to know you, I just see just this deep learner that you are. And that's awesome, right? I see you as this person who's like, I don't want to lean into the old ways. Like, no, there's got to be a better way. Like, I feel like I see that in you. I saw that in that workshop. I saw that when we were talking that one time in Denver. And I just really appreciate you leaning into a whole different approach and trying and learning into it, right? It's not about performance for everybody else's approval. It's about like real deep learning and trying and what's safe to try, what can work out here. And so I just want to appreciate you for you living into and learning into this very type of leadership, because it's a big deal. More of us need to do that. So I'm grateful for you.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. And that's Nonprofit Hub's mission. We're a connected ecosystem of people, resources, and learning. And that's no different for our team, our entire team. We're all like the same thing. Yeah. Just trying to connect, trying to find resources and connecting with people and learning all together. So that's a beautiful place to be.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Delaney.
All right. Well, we will all talk to you guys on the next episode of the Nonprofit Radio Podcast. Have a great day. Thanks for joining us for this Nonprofit Hub Radio Podcast episode. For more resources on fundraising, marketing, and all things nonprofit, be sure to check out the #1 nonprofit toolbox at nonprofithub.org. We hope you'll join us next week for another episode of the Nonprofit Hub Radio Podcast.